Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you, as always, by InsideThePenguins.com, a proud affiliate of the Hockey News. I'm your host, Nick Berlansky, joined, as always, by Nick Horwat and the Pittsburgh Penguins. They've extended their winning streak to 5 games. They're back in a playoff spot. Take that for what you will at this early stage of the season. But they're playing good hockey, and it is thanks to a couple of different factors. Certainly, the top of their lineup is absolutely obscene right now with the amount of points that they're collecting. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Their goaltending's been phenomenal as of late. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. But I want to start here, Horwat. Ahead of what is going to be a monster week of matchups for the Pittsburgh Penguins leading up to American Thanksgiving, I want to start with a discussion on the Pittsburgh Penguins' third line. It's been roughly 3.5 weeks since Radim Zahorna was called up and placed on that line in place of Jansen Harkins. And since then, we've seen that line perform well on a semi-regular basis. More often than not, they're a positive or a net positive in the game for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And looking at the numbers, Zahorna in 10 games played has 5 points, 3 goals, 2 assists, and 15 shots on goal. Drew O'Connor, struggling a little bit when it comes to getting on the score sheet, but playing really well, doing a lot of things that don't show up on the scoreboard. 14 games played, 1 goal, 2 assists, 23 shots on goal. And then there's Lars Eller, which a much larger discussion might need to be had about Lars Eller in the near future. 14 games played, 7 points, 2 goals, 5 assists, and 36 shots on net. Over 2 shots per game for Lars Eller as the third line center. The question becomes then, Horwat, have the Penguins found their answer at third line?
Sure seems like it. I think this is still kind of a mishmash of names, right? It's still not necessarily set in stone that this is the line that has formed an identity that you don't mess with, that you don't make adjustments to just to make adjustments to. You can still filter names in and out of this line, I think, and that's perfectly fine, because while you mentioned the numbers, and they have all played really well and clicked pretty well together. I mean, let's just be blunt. Drew O'Connor's production probably isn't at where it should be. You can adjust him if you need to. Radim Zahorna is still a player, while has definitely earned an NHL-level line and positioning in the roster. If someone below him, you know, improves to a different degree and can bring something a little extra, there is still room for him to be moved out of the lineup. Lars Eller might be the only solid, like, almost set in stone piece on this line, and that's just because of the positioning he had with that role coming into the season. But as it is, it's still a very good line that has found something. It's definitely a step up from when Harkins was there. It's definitely found the mojo to, you know, be pretty solid depth producers, which is something the Penguins needed all of last year. I forget what the stat was. Everyone in the bottom six didn't have, however many points or something along those lines, except for Jeff Carter. But now it looks like at least this line can produce at a decent enough level offensively. Mm-hmm. And all three of them have a pretty solid game on the defensive side of the puck as well. So they are golden children in Mike Sullivan's eyes. So they are both ends of the rink, producing everywhere they can, and at least in Drew O'Connor's case, should start finding some more offense at some point soon.
Yeah, he did, break the dam a little bit when he scored that goal against the Buffalo Sabres last weekend. But you look at the opportunities that he got on Tuesday, there were a couple more chances for him to make it a second game in a row with a goal, and you hope that he can kind of go back and find that scoring touch that he had in the preseason when he was lighting things up. It's interesting that you said Zahorna and Down. I'm kind of thinking the other way around. I know Zahorna is not somebody that you're going to be able to put into the top six for an extended period of time and just rely on him to be a top six winger. I think he's more so a bottom six winger than he is a top six winger, but he kind of fits that traditional middle mold. But, you know, with a guy like Ricard Raquel continuing to struggle to get anything going offensively, continuing to struggle to put the puck in the back of the net, I wouldn't mind seeing if indeed that becomes an issue, which right now it isn't because the Penguins have won five straight. And the only player seemingly struggling to that level is Ricard Raquel. While it's not bringing down his line mates in Malkin and Riley Smith all that much, I think if there is a change to be made, I think that might be the one you make, is you bump Radim Zahorna up, give him an opportunity to see if he can have an effect on that second line, similar to how he has an effect on the third line when it comes to creating chances, creating turnovers in the offensive zone. And you try to get something going with Ricard Raquel. You put him with two guys that are seemingly playing their roles exceptionally well when it comes to Drew O'Connor and Lars Eller, and you see if that sparks something, letting Raquel be the trigger man. Because if you look at that second line, all three of those guys could be trigger men, right? Riley Smith has scored a good bunch of goals this season. Evgeny Malkin has scored the most goals, at least before the last game, than he had since his rookie season in an early season, you know, stretch. So you have three trigger men up there. Not like Raquel isn't getting his opportunities, not like he's not getting his shots, but maybe if he becomes the guy, the put-away guy on that third line, maybe that sparks something. So that's why I found it interesting that you said, you know, maybe move Zahorna down. That might be the flexibility that you have. I would think moving him up would also be on the table, more so than moving him down at this point, because I just don't think, you know, Vinny Hinostroza has been good, but I don't think that, you know, he's close to the level where you need to say, hey, maybe you should bump him up. I think it's more so the Zahorna-Raquel swap that I would look at.
Yeah, absolutely not in the Vinny Hinostroza case. It's whenever I thought of the idea of Zahorna, you know, being bumped down, it's just because of the way the organization probably looks at him, which is probably a lot lower than what fans might say or what he's kind of proven on the ice right now. I also do like the idea of bumping him up in the lineup, especially in Ricard Raquel's place. I'd never thought of that idea, honestly. So once you said it, it kind of clicked, and thinking that's a solid idea as well, especially considering the trajectory both those players are on. The idea of bumping Zahorna down, though, kind of just spurred from, like I said, where the organization might think of him, and other names that could be in the minors right now that could fill into that right wing position at the NHL level pretty easily. Because we always talk about what kind of call-ups or recalls or prospects that the Penguins want to put in the NHL lineup. You don't want to immediately shank them on the fourth line. So yeah, that third line position becomes volatile in terms of who's there. So guys that have the pedigree that can make that jump to the NHL level, at least as right wingers, it ain't many now that I look at it, but Alex Nylander is an option that could slide in there if he, you know, finds some game. And like Kyle Dubas said at the beginning of the season, is expected to be an NHL player by the end of the year. You know, that we don't, and in terms of scoring ability, who do me and you think has more offensive touch? Probably Alex Nylander, but also depends on what the team needs at the time. As of right now, yeah, I think this is a solid option. Colin White could also slide up there if we need the veteran presence all of a sudden. He's not that old, but you get what I'm saying. If you need the other options, there are options that could easily fly in and take Zahorna out of this lineup if.
Yeah, because as of right now, that's, you know, you have no thought of bringing any of those guys up.
Right.
Because you look at what's working right now. The Penguins are on a 5-game winning streak, and the third line has been one of their better lines. I think more often than not, you know, from a consistency standpoint, they outperform the second line. Now, the second line has more high-end talent, so they can make up for it, and you saw that on Tuesday. The third line had twice as many positive shifts than the second line, but the second line went out there, the one shift, Evgeny Malkin, Riley Smith, and Erik Karlsson, who was the defenseman that was out there on the ice at that point, said, you know what, enough's enough. We're gonna dominate this shift, and it's going to end in a goal. And they just went out there and did it, because they have the talent alone to be able to go out there and just do that one shift out of five, and you're like, okay, that's fine. And more often than not, the second line has been good. I'm not trying to downplay that their success this season, but I think the third line has showed consistency every time they go over the boards. They play the same style. They know their roles. They execute their roles to a T, whether that's Drew O'Connor as the forechecking speed guy that creates havoc in the offensive zone, whether that's Lars Eller, who is the intelligent, smart, short passes, set things up in a great way, find soft spots in the offensive zone type guy, or if it's Zahorna, who's kind of a mixture of both. And, you know, we always talk that he uses that long stick of his to make sure that, you know, it's hard for opposing teams to freewheel in the defensive zone and make it hard for them to break out and make it hard for them to get through the neutral zone. I just think that that line has come together really well. And when I was looking at, I said, you know, this line has impressive underlying numbers, 60% of the shot attempts at 5-on-5. They've been out shooting their opponents 61-37 when they've played together through 10 games this season. And when it comes to high danger chances, out chancing opponents high danger wise 30-14 this season. Again, that's through 10 games that they've been together. Absolutely ridiculous stats, ridiculous numbers. They performed well. But I wanted to look at it, you know, around the league. Where do they rank among third lines around the league? And while, yes, they're fifth when it comes to expected goal share, fifth in the National Hockey League when it comes to third lines. When it comes to all lines, they're ninth. I was surprised at how many third lines are at the top of that list. Statistically speaking, the Crosby line is sixth. So it makes you realize that, yeah, a large part of that is these third lines get deployed against, you know, other third lines, mm-hmm. and there's a big dichotomy between the best and the worst third lines in the NHL, but this third line for the Penguins is starting to move its way towards the best side and further away from the worst side, which is where they've been the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, it's finally starting to wake up because the Penguins have needed that depth just in general. You know, you could say they've needed depth scoring, they've needed depth defense, they've needed depth this, that, the other. They're finally getting a big chunk of both offense and defense this time around. It is exactly the goal that was set out for Kyle Dubas when he got here. You know, is to find the rebuild the depth, and however you see fit was kind of the main aspect of Kyle Dubas' summer. And he focused heavily on defense, but the defense that he focused on are also guys that have that sneaky offensive ability. We're seeing it from Lars Eller to a great degree so far. Drew O'Connor, it's not that he brought Drew O'Connor in, but everyone's giving him that chance to prove what he can do on a full-time basis. He didn't start the year at the AHL this year. And again, we're just kind of still waiting for that to wake up. And Radim Zahorna, as much as Penguins fans knew about him before, well, so did Kyle Dubas from his time in Toronto. So there was that sort of perfect match for this position. And then you could throw in all the other names that during training camp fought for third line roles. Jansen Harkins can go in there. Alex Nylander can get tossed into this conversation. Sam Poulin to a degree can get thrown in. And trying to remember other names that were brought in, but like Vinny Hinostroza could easily slide into this as well. Andreas Johnsson to a degree. Kyle Dubas brought in a ton of names that could battle for this third line role, and they seem to have now found a good symmetry between these three. But it is also still, at least like I said before, a line that can be switched, can be adjusted in and out because of performance of certain guys.
Yeah, if the performance decreases. I don't think that that's a worry at this point. Right. The only thing that I will say, I do think there is room for improvement when it comes to Drew O'Connor.
Yeah.
It does feel like he's a bit, not that he's performed poorly, but when it comes to the finishing ability that's necessary to play in that role, it feels like he's a bit above his skis playing in a third line role. It almost feels as if it's a guy like Teddy Bluger that we saw last year where we kept saying over and over again, he has the potential to move up in the lineup. He has the potential to move up in the lineup. Put him at third line center. Give him that opportunity. And when he gets that opportunity, it just doesn't quite fit as well as you'd want it to fit, right? The glass slipper didn't slide right on. Is it working right now? Yes. You know, you can walk down the stairs if you want, but you might trip and fall. So that's the one thing with Drew O'Connor that makes me a little concerned. I think that as a fourth line left wing, he would be perfectly cast. I think he would be one of the better players in that position across the league, considering his skill set, considering the way that he's playing, considering the way that the Penguins like to deploy him. You know, I certainly think he'd be an upgrade over Matt Nieto, who's been in that position for the first 14 games of the season, but The only problem with that is I don't see somebody in the organization that can supplant him. I don't have the confidence in Alex Nylander to be able to go and play that type of hockey the way that Drew O'Connor does to make sure that that line continues to succeed in the ways that it has succeeded, right? You need somebody who plays the way that Drew O'Connor plays. Similar characteristics like speed, some physicality, and the desire to forecheck. Those are the pillars of Drew O'Connor's game, and the scoring is something that we've been hoping that has come along, and it just hasn't. You know, when I look at the organization, I don't see very many options like that. Poulin could be an option, like you said, but one, he's injured. Mm-hmm. He's week to week right now. Two, you're forfeiting some of that speed. Poulin does not have the foot speed that Drew O'Connor has. He does have that work ethic, that down-low moose-type mentality, but you are forfeiting that speed. Valtteri Puustinen is another guy that I've banged the drum for several times, but you're forfeiting, you know, that forechecking ability. He does it, but not to the capability, not to the level of Drew O'Connor, not to mention that he has 2 goals in 10 games at the AHL level. That's certainly not worthy of getting called up to the NHL and getting a third line spot. So, you know, right now he's kind of in my, you know, personal doghouse. I wouldn't want to see him supplant to Drew O'Connor. I just don't think there's anybody in that, you know, organization right now. The only one that I will say, and he's not going to play on the Penguins during the regular season because he's playing in the WHL right now. And again, far-fetched, just a little nugget I want to throw out there, but Braden Jaeger is having a phenomenal season with the WHL Moose Jaw Warriors. And it's not like we haven't seen Kyle Dubas call up his young guns in the postseason when the junior season comes to an end and give them a pretty substantial role. He did that with Matthew Nyes, who's now on the first line for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Would he do that with Braden Jaeger and make him a third liner once the playoffs roll around, the postseason, if we get to that? Again, very far down the line. That's the only player in organization, though, that I could see potentially, you know, as of right now, supplanting Drew O'Connor down the line.
Yeah, that's a tough one just because
It's all forethought. That's so far away, but that's the only one that I can think
of. Not even that. I'm taking what you just said into account here of Kyle Dubas has done it before, in that he's, you know, had that history of pulling up junior guys in the past. I think, at least in terms of the Penguins organization, that just very much doesn't seem like the way they do things, and it really hasn't been. B, Mike Sullivan's still writing out the roster here, still writing up the lineup. We saw it before with Jim Rutherford players. You know, the GM and the president can bring in all the names they want. If Mike Sullivan doesn't want to play him, he's not going to. If Mike Sullivan, play Braden Jaeger, not because Jaeger is bad or because Jaeger is this, that, the other. Mike Sullivan just might not have that confidence in him because he is 18. First reps in the NHL in vitally important postseason games, especially after how last season went, not getting any at all. You kind of want to have your best foot forward. Maybe Mike Sullivan thinks of it as a head game. He doesn't want to all of a sudden screw up the progression of Jaeger into the NHL. Again, this is something that once playoffs get closer, whenever, you know, Sullivan starts speaking on the playoffs a little more, or we get Kyle Dubas to talk again about roster moves like that. At least until we start getting words from them on that, I don't see it happening personally. That's just me. Yeah. I like the idea a lot. I do, because it is put your best players on the ice at the most important times. If he's that option, you roll with it. Absolutely. But we'll see how it goes.
The only thing I think you're forgetting is, how did Mike Sullivan win his first 2 Stanley Cups?
Pulled up AHL first players, and I feel like that's a touch different.
It's a touch different, but it's younger players, and I understand he did have those players in the AHL. He coached them. He had that previously, but he's seen Braden Jaeger now for a preseason. He's certainly keeping an eye on him. Let's not forget, like, you know, I know there's a lot going on, but you know Mike Sullivan has an eye. He's getting scouting reports about what's happening in Moose Jaw. And Braden Jaeger right now, 27 points in 18 games played, 12 of them goals, and Moose Jaw is second in the East Division of the WHL. He's getting those reports, not to mention that, you know, that is part of the game. Whenever he was winning cups, it was Brian Rust the first year in 2016. It was Jake Gensel in 2017. And let's not, you know, forget that one of the big tent poles of Braden Jaeger's game last season in his draft year in the WHL was that his offensive numbers dipped because he was worried about making sure he'd be a better defensive player from a forward position. So I think that there's certainly a lot of aspects that go into that decision, and certainly a decision that, you know, Sullivan and Dubas, if they're forward thinking, which I do believe they are, they probably have in the back of their mind, they've probably had a few discussions because they actually talk, unlike Sullivan and the last general manager. But, you know, it is still something that's very, very far off. Yeah. And something that I didn't, you know, this became a discussion, but it's just a little seed that I want to plant in everybody's minds that, hey, once that time comes, if all things are the same, and the Penguins don't want to go out and spend money to get a third line guy or spend resources to get a third line guy, they have a kid in the WHL right now that is performing at a very high level, that has shown, you know, desire to be defensively responsible, and that could be brought up because historically the general manager and the head coach have brought up young players late in the season for playoff runs. So that's the only thing I'm doing is throwing that little thing in there, but it was certainly, you know, obviously it's a more nuanced discussion than just 5 minutes can allow for.
Absolutely. There's all kind of ups, downs, ins and outs that can go into that sort of conversation.
Yeah.
And it's one that I'm sure we'll be following for a while. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's something that I'd be interested in. I think before we jump to the Jaeger train, though, we're going to want to see how certain guys in the AHL have played. We're going to want to see what other options are there before we throw in the 18-year-old. I'm curious to know if he'd be 19 by then.
I do believe he would be 19 by that time and point. But also, you know, they're going to have plenty of opportunity to throw other guys in. Maybe a Jonathan Gruden gets an opportunity because Jaeger can't come up until the end of the junior season, which would be around the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Of course, and who knows how far the Moose Jaw Warriors goes. Go. Yeah, there's always that aspect as well. Why could I not find Jaeger's anything?
Age?
Is he not on Cap Friendly right now, or at least not on our roster on Cap Friendly?
No, interesting. He didn't sign his ELC yet.
Oh, so that also has to happen too.
Yeah, but that takes 2 seconds. Come on now.
I did not realize. To be fair, I did not realize that. And of course it does. He's still under the Penguins' possession, but I just didn't realize he did not sign one. All right.
Yeah, no, he didn't sign his ELC yet, so he's not technically on a junior slide, but, you know, that could be changed very quickly if they sign him to an ELC. But we're going to take a quick break when we return. A pivotal week on deck for the Pittsburgh Penguins, 4 massive games between now and American Thanksgiving, which is a tentpole date at the NHL schedule. We'll be right back.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. USAA. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by InsideThePenguins.com. If you're searching for some meaningful hockey, you're going to get it over the next week and less than a week, honestly. In the next 6 days, the Penguins have 4 massive matchups. They have, obviously, the New Jersey Devils coming to town later this evening to take them on, the Metropolitan Division rivals. Then they'll take on 2 more Metro rivals before American Thanksgiving, including the Carolina Hurricanes on the road on Saturday, and then next Wednesday, the night before Thanksgiving, a massive day for hockey fans. Penguins versus Rangers at the old paint bucket. The one game in between those is a date with the defending Stanley Cup champions in the Vegas Golden Knights. So yeah, if it sounds like an absolute murderer's row of opponents, it's because it is. And the Pittsburgh Penguins, they're certainly going to be, you know, need to be at their best to be up for this test, because they're facing probably their toughest 4 games to date this season. Good thing, though, is that they're entering it on a 5-game win streak and playing some of the best hockey that we've seen in a very long time.
They are. They're they're catching the Devils at the right time too.
It's
depending on the return of Jack Hughes or not. They're catching the Devils on a bit of a slide. And again, the Penguins are on their five-game winning streak. Say what you want about some of the opponents in that five-game winning streak. The Sharks were in there. Buffalo is in there. Still, you're excited that the Penguins are winning games. Again, like we said before, it is how they're winning the games. They've found five different ways to win, really. And they just need to look for a sixth against a very sturdy, for the most part, Devils team that really shocked the world last year. We'll see if it can still sustain that. Like I said, this little slide is not helping them, but it's still a very highly touted team in this league right now with some talent. With I'm gonna forget they added Tyler Toffoli until he rips two on us tonight.
So
they're still a frightening team, and something that this is going to be the first big first real massive test of the season, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the competition for the Penguins has been stiff so far, has been tough, but there's something different about the Metro Division rivals, the Devils of all people. Bring on Carolina on Saturday, Vegas for what you will, not division, but still a big test. And then New York right after, this is it. This is the beginning of the first real test for this team.
You talk about test. In your opinion, what game do you think poses the toughest test for the Pittsburgh Penguins coming up in this four-game stretch?
So the Devils comes to mind right away because even whenever the Devils weren't that great, this historically the Penguins have not done well against them.
Mm-hmm.
Carolina gave the Penguins so many issues last year. And the Rangers, they're leading the division, but can it sustain? I'm going to say the toughest test might be, especially if Jack Hughes is back tonight, the Devils.
Yeah, when I look at this, I the Devils are a tough test, even with Jack, especially with Jack Hughes. He has 20 points in 10 games. Coming off that shoulder injury, he's still going to be dynamic, and that's still something that the Penguins are going to have to contest with. But to me, not because it's the only road game on this schedule, but that game against the Hurricanes is going to be a tough one because the Penguins have just been unable to get over the hump against this team in the past four seasons. It wasn't just last season where they didn't get any wins, even though they lost all four of those games by one goal. But they're 1-4-3 against the Carolina Hurricanes in the past four seasons. That is a tough test, especially because when I talked earlier about, you know, the Penguins' third line is one of the best in hockey. It's the fifth ranked when it comes to expected goal share. You know what the number one line is in the NHL when it comes to expected goal share with at least 80 minutes of ice time, which is how much the Penguins' third line is? It's the Canes' third line for a reason. I mean, the Hurricanes on paper have been stacked year in and year out, not to mention, like you mentioned on the last episode, they basically have a 1A, 1B, 1C in net, and that's always the biggest question for any team. They have three talented goaltenders. They have one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League in Rod Brind'Amour. They're well-coached. They play the game well, and they're a deep team. Not to mention, they're a team that plays with speed, and they're a team that plays the way the Pittsburgh Penguins want to play. Defensively responsible and opportunistic on offense. That's exactly how the Hurricanes play, and they have the talent to execute that game plan. And so far, you know, over the past four seasons, they've been able to execute it well against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I think that's going to be the toughest test for them of the four, not to take anything away from the Devils or the Golden Knights, who started the season red hot, not to mention winning a Stanley Cup last year, and the Rangers, who, let's face it, after that one win the Penguins got over their New York Rangers last year, embarrassed the Penguins in all the other matchups. So, you know, I think the Canes still pose the toughest test for the Penguins in this stretch here. That's going to be, listen, there's no easy games on this schedule. There's no fluff in this next four-game stretch. I do think, though, the toughest one is going to be the Hurricanes. Fortunately, that's on the first half of a back-to-back and not the back half.
Yeah, you're going to have most likely Tristan Jarry for that game. And if you do look down their roster, you're right. Like, the players you listed off, or at least the lines you listed off, are frightening for the Hurricanes. The goaltending, however, did get interesting with Frederik Andersen going down onto IR for I forget what exactly it was, but that doesn't make too much of a difference. You'll only face one goalie, and like we said, they had a 1-2-3 easy. You know, those three could all be starters, but I mean, here's the thing: they could all be starters. I still don't know how much. I've never had too much fear of Antti Raanta, you know, as much as He has been a solid goaltender for Carolina. He's never really struck me as a definite standout number one. I mean, he's definitely a starter, but definitely not the star. And somehow Frederik Andersen kind of stole a lot of spotlight there. Pyotr Tkachenkov might be their best goalie, but he's still kind of treated as a third stringer there. So, and especially considering they just signed Halak to a PTO. This is a team that clearly they like having three useful goalies. If one of them goes down, they're signing another one to a PTO. They like having useful goalies. So who knows who the Penguins get even in goal. That could be a pivotal choice for the Hurricanes on Saturday. Not that that lightens the load for the Penguins, you know, and makes them an easier competition. But I think that sort of question mark is what at least pushes me in the direction of saying New Jersey is tougher than Carolina. Because there's a lot of question marks with Carolina, at least in net.
Yeah, let's focus on New Jersey then, because that game's coming up first. That game's coming up here in just about 10 hours from now. The Penguins last season were 0-3-1 against the New Jersey Devils. The closest they came was a 2-1 loss in New Jersey that harkened back to the old Martin Brodeur days when you'd go to New Jersey and it'd be a rock fight at Prudential Center. But other games were not as close. 4-2 win for the Devils, 5-2 win for the Devils, 6-1 win for the New Jersey Devils as I headbutt my microphone. But, you know, they were red hot to start this season, was New Jersey. They've cooled off recently because Jack Hughes is hurt. Nico Hischier is hurt. But like you mentioned, with Hughes potentially coming back and with the success this team had against the Penguins last year, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a battle of whether or not the Penguins can continue to play the defensive mindset hockey that they've, you know, played and gotten on this 5-game win streak.
Yeah, it's just going to be a tough test. Those certain players being in or out, like I said, we're catching the Devils on a slide. I mean, 3-game losing streak. It's first of all, didn't see that coming. Also didn't realize Nico Hischier was also injured. So things do get interesting real quickly here. But Vitek Vanacek's 6-3 so far. An 887?
Their goaltending's not always been stellar. The thing is, their defense is phenomenal. You know, it helps when they
Dougie
were basically
Hamilton.
Well, I was going to say it helps when they were basically given John Marino for free. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're a stellar defensive team. Luke Hughes has looked really good to start this season. But it all comes back to that, you know, stingy defense that the Pittsburgh Penguins showed, particularly against Anaheim last week. They're going to need to pull that right back out of their hat again tonight against the New Jersey Devils, because you look at last season, when did the Penguins, you know, when they got blown out by these teams, it's because they didn't play good defense. 4 goals, 5 goals, 6 goals allowed. They never scored more than 2 against the New Jersey Devils. They need to play low event hockey, because high event hockey favors the New Jersey Devils, not just against the Penguins, but against everybody. You look at last season, you see a perfect example of that. So Penguins need to keep it low event, need to keep it the way that they did against New Jersey, need to keep it the way that they did against Buffalo, which is limit the high danger chances, insulate your goaltender, allow him to see pucks, make stops, and limit the rebounds. And then when you get the opportunity, you have to capitalize. It's been the formula for most of this 5-game win streak. That needs to be the formula tonight if you want to push it to 6.
That's just what I was about to say. That low event hockey is exactly kind of what the Penguins have shifted to a little bit. Not necessarily fully there, but they've had that shift in game planning. I still have to read Jesse Marshall's piece on it.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It is phenomenal. I was going to bring it up in the last segment, but it is, if you want to see, you know, it's a bad day for the Sullivan is what stubborn crowd, because he made a drastic shift. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Jesse Marshall writes for The Athletic, put a piece up yesterday. It was yesterday or the day before, whenever it was. It's his latest piece on The Athletic. It headlines and highlights exactly how the Penguins have turned things around this season and what they've done systematically. And it outlines it. And for me, it basically, it's like, explain this to me, you know, Michael Scott, explain this to me like I'm 5. That's exactly what Jesse does. And he doesn't do it in a condescending way, which is refreshing. And he just basically breaks it down in such an easy way to understand that it'll elevate the way you watch games. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, for sure. And like I said, I need to still get around to reading it. I'm sure I will today, especially going into a game where this low event
needs to be
new
played.
Style is going to be needed. So, yeah, absolutely, I'll check it out. It's one of those must-read pieces. So, but that's exactly what the Penguins have already started, right? They've already started this low event sort of shutdown game that while still producing offensively because they have the star power to do that.
Yeah.
So it all just needs to kind of come together tonight, especially in this vitally important matchup.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens tonight. We'll see what happens over the next, you know, 6 days, is it? Because leading up to American Thanksgiving, we all talk about how that is an important day. The Penguins just got back into the playoff picture. You want to be, at the very least, in or very close to a playoff spot when the time American Thanksgiving rolls around. You got to perform well against these really four talented teams if you want to make sure you're still in that position come Thanksgiving. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, can the Penguins sustain this level of play, particularly from the stars like you mentioned and from their goaltenders? We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by InsideThePenguins.com. Horwat, I talked yesterday on Penguins to Go about three Penguins who had substantial point streaks currently running. I mean, Sidney Crosby, 9 games, Erik Karlsson, 6 games, Jake Guentzel, 5 games. But when you look at their top stars overall, their performance is obscene. I mean, Crosby, Malkin, Guentzel, and Erik Karlsson all over a point per game 14 games into the season, which is ridiculous enough. Then you look at Brian Rust has 13 points in 14 games. Riley Smith has 12 points in 14 games. The top of the Penguins lineup is absolutely lighting the world on fire. But is that sustainable? Like, the way that they're playing, are they going to be able to sustain this level of success throughout the entirety of an 82-game season, or at the very least, as close as humanly possible, because we know there are dips and valleys in a long season, mm-hmm. such as the NHL's.
You know, for certain players, I absolutely do think so. I think this is a Sidney Crosby year heading in. Mike Sullivan mentioned, at least in Malkin's case, that he took missing the playoffs personally. I chatted with Brian Rust after practice yesterday, and talking about Crosby's leadership, and he said he didn't like... Obviously, no one was happy with the way last season ended, but he said he used that same term. Sidney Crosby wasn't happy with how last season ended and took it personally. So when you're two-headed monster like that, when those two are taking missing the postseason personally, they're going to take it upon themselves to push everything in the direction of getting them back into the postseason. So far, we're seeing that with 19 points from Crosby in 14 games. Pace for, I believe, 111, 112 points. Mm. Stupid. He's 36.
Yeah.
He's 36, and that's the kind of pace he's on. Kenny Malkin's on pace for over 100 points, or at least he was heading into the Columbus game. Just, you know, with 17 and 14. That's a stupid pace for a 37-year-old. And then we're seeing Jake Guentzel squeeze in there, 18 points. Big playmaking season from him. 18 points through 14 games. And Erik Karlsson is officially arrived, guys.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is pacing towards some absolutely ridiculous numbers. Again, early, so the pace, quote-unquote, doesn't mean too much. But if anyone can sustain it, at least for now, it's going to be the guys like Crosby, Guentzel. Malkin, we'll see. We know Malkin is very Malkin. We're super jacked about the start, there's no doubt. And he'll probably take a dip. But it will definitely wake up at the end of the year again when it really matters. That's just mm-hmm. how Malkin's career trajectory is gone. especially now later in his career. Maybe Erik Karlsson can also sustain this. Because, you know, it just took a minute to kind of mesh. Guys keep saying that with all the new faces, they knew it was kind of going to take a while to get things put together and get going. I think we're just starting to really see it now. And Erik Karlsson taking the lead in that new face showing up in a big way. Riley Smith just did it first. We saw that immediately with that chemistry with Malkin. Erik Karlsson's probably just going to do it more and a bit more over the top because of the player, the name, the contract. He's going to be Erik Karlsson. Whereas Riley Smith having this genuine awesome season to start the year too is really good. It's really cool. And everyone's sort of blossoming. Sustainability for certain guys, absolutely.
And here's the thing. I think that it's sustainable for one of a couple reasons. One, I think the supporting cast below this group, I mean, we didn't even mention, you know, Chris Letang, who is in a completely different role. He doesn't need to be in this I'm going to collect every point under the sun type role, because you know what he's doing is playing outstanding penalty killing, which I believe you outlined in an article yesterday on Inside the Penguins. He's playing phenomenal at 5-on-5. He's bringing along a guy in Ryan Graves and making him a little bit better each and every game. And you look at the rest of the supporting cast here. We talked about the third line. They're playing well. Even if they're not scoring, they're creating momentum, like Mike Sullivan said after the Tuesday game. The fourth line is doing similar things where they're not getting caved in. They're not letting the momentum shift. And that's leading to good penalty killing, which is leading to more momentum shifts in favor of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Not to mention, after taking that broader look, if you scope in to these guys, these six players that the Pittsburgh Penguins right now have all hovering around or above a point per game, it hasn't all been all season long, right? Sidney Crosby, yes, has scored points in 13 of 14 games this season. But there was a time, the first little couple of games of the season, that everybody's like, all right, he's collecting points, but something's off and it's not just that his skates messed up. Right,
it never felt over the top. That's I outlined that at 1.2. He's got points in almost every game, but it never felt like he's purely dominated a game. Mm-hmm. And Mike Sullivan said, you know, like these guys, Malkin and Crosby, they are both playing well. There's no doubt that first of all, a 36-year-old scoring in every game but one. Yeah, you're taking that regardless of who the player is. You're especially from Sidney Crosby, you're gonna take that. But you know it's Sidney Crosby. You know there's another level that can be hit there. Mike Sullivan said, yeah, these guys can still hit another gear. They can still ramp it up a little more. The very next game, Crosby goes out and has 3 goals and an assist for a 4-point night.
Yeah.
So the domination from Crosby is there. And he's waking up a little more. Like, you know, he was getting points in every game. Yeah. Well, now it never felt he was fully there until Columbus.
Yeah, and the point I was going with is, like, Crosby at the beginning of the season, it wasn't domination. Like, you look at the numbers right now, and yes, his numbers look like he's been dominant all year, but it wasn't, you know, Crosby going above and beyond in the opening games. It wasn't Erik Karlsson going above and beyond in the opening games, but they've come along recently. Meanwhile, while Evgeny Malkin is still getting points on the board, he had a good play on Tuesday, but he's not that above and beyond player that he was in the opening. Brian Rust has kind of faded back a little bit, playing good hockey, but not always on the score sheet, not always capitalizing. Riley Smith started like gangbusters. Riley Smith, I don't believe, has had that big of an impact. Like, he's played well, but he hasn't had that overabundance impact that he had early in the season. So there are ebbs and flows, but the fact is there are so many players that are performing at a high level that those ebbs and flows, as long as they don't all fall at the same time, which is unlikely with six players of that talent ability, as long as they don't all fall at the same time, you should have one or two or three players playing at that highest level at all times this season. And it helps when the supporting cast is performing well, is playing their roles to a T. They might not be contributing on the scoreboard, but they're doing a good job in the other aspects of the game. And when you have that, you have a team that can sustain the success that you have. Now, is Crosby going to be scoring in every single game this year? Probably not. Is Evgeny Malkin going to be rookie Evgeny Malkin or Art Ross Evgeny Malkin by the end of the year? Probably not. But you're counting that these guys, when one falls, somebody's there to take his place, and you're counting that the basement and the floor is not that low. The floor should still be at a considerable level when these guys have their valleys of the season. And I think that what you're seeing right now is that is certainly a possibility, and I think that it's certainly sustainable for these stars because of who they have around them and the level of play that they're getting from their third line, from Chris Letang on the defensive side of things, from even the third pairing at points has performed well and done their job and know your role, do your role, and that's all we're asking of you. So I think it's all coming together in a really good way so far. You're seeing them be able to put things together when it comes to the scheme, the system. We talked about Jesse's piece, and you're seeing a team that is building something that could be sustainable, unlike last season where it was, you know, two sheets to the wind or whatever that saying is, and it was, hey, we're going to see how this goes. We're going to go until the wheels fall off. Well, the wheels fell off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you really want to take a real look into, you know, how the season's going, we're talking about these players like they're, you know, lighting the world on fire. And don't get me wrong, we do believe that they are because they are playing phenomenally well. Look around the league, though. I mean, the league leader in points right now is JT Miller. What? With 26. 26. Yeah. Crosby's got 19.
Yeah, he's tied for 11. That's a, or 13th, yeah, I believe.
Something like that. I can't find the name. There he is. Yeah, it's a big gap. So between, you know, the where the Crosby is and where the top performers on the season are. Also, just the Vancouver Canucks are wild this year.
They're lighting the world on fire, yeah.
JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, sorry. Whenever I said JT Miller leading the league in points of 26, sorry. JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, and Quinn Hughes all have 26 points leading the league in points.
Yeah.
So, yeah, aside from that weirdness, there's definitely a discrepancy between where the Penguins sit in their points and the league leaders because it's getting spread out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like you mentioned, there have been already a couple of valleys, a couple of dips, or yep, taking the time to really ramp things up. I'm not saying Crosby's going to chase down some Art Ross numbers here, but he's definitely going to hover around some really good numbers, especially if this can sustain. Like I said, I think Crosby can absolutely sustain these numbers. Jake Ensler is still young enough that he should be able to sustain the numbers regardless of, you know, expectations or how he's playing. He should still be able to produce at his level. Evgeny Malkin, I just don't see it happening for the middle portion of the season. Maybe at the end, definitely at the end, when things ramp up for him, because that's, I feel like, how a 37-year-old Evgeny Malkin's going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say he's not going to produce, like he's going to have 0 points through the middle months of the season, but he's going to be a little bit different and a little quieter, except for the odd game here and there. And then Erik Karlsson waking up into a fine little offensive defenseman is hilariously good for this team. Watching the trajectory of points is going to be a ton of fun. Like I said, they're not going to put up Art Ross numbers, but they're definitely going to sustain this and be at their own pace and win in their way.
Did you just call Erik Karlsson a fine little offensive defenseman?
Probably. I'm probably far from the first one to say it, too.
A fine little... The guy scored 101 points last year, Horwat. He's more than that. 5 points... Or 5 points. He has 5 multi-point games in the last 6. He's certainly heating up to that level that he was last season when he scored 100 points from the blue line for the first time in 30 years. But I think the other thing about specifically these 6, when I look at them, they all have something to prove this season. Mm-hmm. And they're guys that are, you know, historically well-driven. I mean, Crosby, Malkin, you need say less about their drive, but they're taking it personally. Like Mike Sullivan said, they missed the playoffs, and it wasn't, you know, it's different from other years because, yes, they haven't had postseason success since 2018 because they absolutely lit up the Philadelphia Flyers and went 6 games with the eventual Cup champs. So they haven't had playoff success since 2018, but it was different last year because, you know, you could make the excuse, you know, there's the COVID year. Well, it was a weird scenario. We really weren't into it or something like that. You know, no fans in the bubble. It was strange. You know, Patrick Marleau came over in that whole scenario. It was weird. Patrick Hornqvist was struggling. Yeah, you could make that excuse. Jake Guentzel was coming off of a shoulder injury, hadn't played and had been, you know. You look at the Rangers series. Well, we were down to our third goaltender, we really outplayed them, but it didn't happen, so what do we need to change? Last year it was, hey, you can make the playoffs if you beat this lowly Chicago Blackhawks team and Columbus Blue Jackets team that you've beaten every other time you've played them. That's literally, you know, that's what you had to do, and you let everybody down. Like, mm-hmm. You let your fan base down. You came up short. You know, there wasn't a, hey, well, we played better, but this, you know, mitigating circumstance held us back. It was you screwed the pooch. So yeah, they're taking it personally. They have something to prove this season. That's Crosby. That's Malkin. That's Gensel, who has an added layer to this. Hey, it is a contract year. These guys are about to come down. When it comes to these guys, I'm talking about the Penguins organization, are about to come down and try to lowball me, because that's what every organization does in every contract dispute, or not dispute, every contract negotiation. It doesn't even have to be dispute. Hey, this is what we think you're worth. Almost every time, the guy is going to be like, yeah, I think I'm worth more than that. So he's trying to prove something to not just himself, but to the organization as to why he deserves a certain amount of money. Erik Karlsson, in his first year in Pittsburgh, the expectations are high. He's trying to prove that he still has what it takes to not just be a 100-point player on a bottom-feeding team, but he has what it takes to being a solid contributing player to a team that is at the top of the standings and vying for the Stanley Cup. Brian Rust, coming off a bad season, he has stuff to prove. Riley Smith, he just won the Stanley Cup. Can he do it somewhere else? Can he multiply what he was able to do on a Vegas Golden Knights team in Pittsburgh? Or is it just the magic that he captured as a Golden Misfit? There's a lot of things to prove in this organization. There's a lot of things to prove in this lineup, particularly at the top. And these guys are all taking that task, and they're hitting it out of the park so far. Yeah, it was a slow start in October, but you look at the way that they've bounced back, you look at the way that these guys have been playing, even in some of those rough games, and you see that, yes, there is something to prove with this Penguins team, and they're going out there, and they're proving it right now with a 5-game win streak, and you hope that they can continue that through the next 3-4 months as the season progresses.
Yeah, and don't forget, and all those names you listed, this whole conversation we just had, there's another big name that we did not touch on, and that's Tristan Jarry.
Yep.
What does he have to prove? Well, so much off of starting up a new contract where half the fan base wanted him gone. Half the other half said, okay, but maybe to a smaller deal. How about none of you get what you want? He sticks around for 5 years, $5 million, $5+ million. Well, now he's got all of that to prove. The new president general manager, not even a continuation of Ron Hextall, the new face who was able to build the team in his image, Kyle Dubas, said the best option we have here is Tristan Jarry. So all of the weight is also now put on Tristan Jarry's shoulders. There's a lot that he needs to prove. He is also in this conversation. It's just, we'll be having his conversation all year long. Whereas if Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin continue their streaks and continue their paces, ho-hum, it's Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. It's important to have the discussion now, whereas Jarry, we will talk about all year long. Don't worry. The annual goalie controversy in Pittsburgh is surely coming down the pike here, especially with Nedeljkovic possibly returning. Sorry, maybe watching the Browns game.
And then returning, yes.
So we'll see. Tristan Jarry's got a ton to prove, too. He's also right in the middle of this conversation.
Yeah, the question that we said on the outside of this segment is right over there on the bottom of the rail. It says, is this success sustainable? Tristan Jarry is the poison pill. Jarry is the poison pill. Whether or not that pill gets squished and released into the Penguins' veins, that's a different question. But he is the poison pill, because right now him and even Magnus Hellberg, the third string goalie for the Pittsburgh Penguins, are playing near perfect during this 5-game win streak. Jarry is 4-0-0 with a .955 save percentage, a 1.25 goals against average, and 1.5 shutouts. Hellberg is 1-0 with a .936 save percentage, 1.5 goals against average, and half of a shutout. These guys have performed well. So at the end of the day, yes, I think that the forward way and the way that the Penguins have played with their skaters, it is something that could be sustainable this season, especially the fact that there's so many players playing their role to a T right now. But even if they do that, the one thing that can always draw back is poor performance from your goaltender. And while Tristan Jarry is playing well, while Tristan Jarry has shown that he can perform well in this league, can he do it at a consistent basis has been the question for the past 4 years. And it's the question that is always going to linger in the back of my mind, at least, as to whether or not success is sustainable for the Penguins with this current team. Because is Tristan Jarry sustainable becomes the headline in my eyes. Because if he is, I think the Penguins are going to be okay.
Yeah. Did you say he has 1.5 shutouts, by the way?
I'm giving him 1.5 shutouts. The league is not. The league is also not giving Magnus Hellberg any shutouts. So he has 1.5 shutouts during this 5-game win streak. Yeah, he has two more earlier in the season, but he has 1.5 in this win streak.
Got it. That's what I was getting at, because I was about to say he has 3. But yes. But also, I mean, that just goes to show the start that he had, at least in one of those games. He picked up that big shutout against the Capitals in their home opener. That shutout against the Capitals, though, bigger than we think. It was game 2, yeah. But it had a bit more of an effect than we may realize. I mean, the losing streak kind of hit right after, but league-leading three shutouts right now. You could argue 3.5, 3 2/3, if you will, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hellebrink stepped in a great way and has really, you know, driven home the fact that this Penguins team has solid depth at goaltending, not just Jari, DeSmith, Tokarski / Domingue / Lagacy. Mm-hmm. We have actual goaltending depth. Jari, awesome. Nedeljkovic, cool. Let's see if he can resurge. Hellberg stepped in a huge way. Mm-hmm. There's some real goaltending depth here too.
Yeah, so it's certainly going to be a fun week, and it's going to be a fun season to see whether or not the Penguins can sustain this. But now we've seen it. We've seen that they can reach this level. We know that it's in there for the Pittsburgh Penguins, which means all they have to do is channel that and find a way to make it sustainable throughout a very long season. They've played, 14 games? That leaves, I'm horrible at math, but I think that's 68 games left on the schedule. But, you know, it's going to be a big question of whether or not Tristan Jarry can help be the stabilizing force for the Pittsburgh Penguins moving forward. But we'll get to see a lot of tough tests in the next week, whether or not that they're able to continue to play their game and whether or not that game translates to facing the top of the Metropolitan Division, who they'll face in 3 of the next 4. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Tip of the Iceberg. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time.